And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I briefly talk about the Sixers 111-97 win over the Dallas Mavericks, specifically about Ben Simmons and his defensive performance on Luka Doncic. We then pivot to a listener mailbag, where we spend quite a bit of time talking about Kyle Lowry and his potential as a trade target. We talk about Tobias Harris and what kind of value he would have as a trade chip. We talk a little bit about the coronavirus pandemic and whether or not the uncertainty for the rest of the season should influence what the Sixers do at the trade deadline. We dive into Ben Simmons, his improved play, and whether or not that was influenced by the James Harden trade rumors. And then we have another hypothetical on Embiid and Iverson. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, head on over to theathletic.com/SixersBeat, where you can get a 50% discount on a yearly subscription. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, a part of the Athletic's podcast network. Yeah, I guess today's podcast is going to be a mailbag edition of the Sixers Beat. We do have to cover the game, 111-97 win over the weird up and down Dallas Mavericks, a game that really wasn't all that close and had maybe the best defensive performance, individual defensive performance we have seen in, I mean, quite some time. But how you doing, Rich?
I'm good, man. I asked for a blowout. I asked for a big win, and they gave it to me. So that's good.
You did. You did ask for a blowout. You did ask for a big win, and they gave it to you. And to be honest, there's a point, you know, late in the third quarter where I think the bench, or it might have been, I think one of the starters or two of the starters, I think it was maybe Simmons and Curry, stayed on the court, but the bench started to shuffle in. Sixers were up something like 11 at that time, and you thought, well, shit, he's going to bring in three bench players here and start the fourth quarter. There's probably going to be an all bench unit. This 11 point lead could get to five and you're going to end up playing Joel Embiid 37 minutes again. And the bench extended that lead, made the entire fourth quarter garbage time. I think it was an 18 point lead going into the fourth, extended even more to start. And we had a laugher, which was great because I got to start writing my article without fear of the narrative changing completely. And we had a good night. But before we get to the mailbag, really, I don't talk about the whole game because there's some ups and some downs. And, you know, Tobias Harris is probably the most important development out of there. He had a right knee contusion, which is a bruise. MRI came back today, showed no structural damage. Wouldn't be the first time we've heard that and things went sideways, but that is good news. Does that mean he comes back before the All-Star break? I don't know. Maybe he takes three games off and gives a, you know, week and a half, 2 week break. But that is good news.
Two quick thoughts on that. One, not the worst time in the world to get an injury. Like you said, All-Star break coming up. But the second one is, even if he misses three games, and hey, you know, I don't know, maybe he misses less than that. Maybe he's back for the big Utah game, whatever. Tobias Harris not being available to play is a new thing. Like, that dude in the era of load management
is an
absolute Iron Man. Really, I mean, the only times that he has missed games over the past 5 years has been like one game at the end of the year when a coach would sit him. This year, he missed three games due to COVID protocols. That's it. He plays every night. So it is going to be a little strange with him out. But yeah, as long as there isn't any structural damage. I mean, it was, did you even see what happened to him?
Nope. You just looked up and, oh, wait, Tobias is walking off the court. What's going on?
He made a steal that juiced a fast break that I think Simmons got fouled on at the end of it. So I didn't look at what happened afterwards. But, yeah, then he was walking off the court. So hopefully he's okay.
Yeah, and I even went back and I rewatched and I couldn't tell. I don't know if it happened off camera or what happened. I did not see the injury. But yeah, so that is the most long-term concern of what happened in that game. The biggest short-term concern was Ben Simmons. Luka Doncic, when he was defended by Ben Simmons, and he was defended by Ben Simmons most of the night. I think it was something like 70% of the possessions. He scored 7 points, no, 6 points on 3-for-7 shooting, had 4 turnovers. Those are the official numbers per NBA.com. He locked him the F up. And probably even more than any of those numbers we just cited were the shots that Luka didn't get and the spots he didn't get to and the passes he kicked out of. Ben did a real good job. And Luka is, you know, Luka has an advantage. It's not always the same advantage, but it's an advantage on pretty much every matchup, whether it's, you know, perimeter ball skills and a step back jumper. Like, Luka is 6'8", big bodied. He can either shoot over you or bully you off of your spot. Or if you put someone big on him, usually he can blow by you or get a step back. He can't get any of that on Ben. And Ben is one of the more unique defenders and where he doesn't have a single real advantage. And sometimes an offensive player will succeed just because offenses succeed against good defensive players. But he doesn't have the kind of advantage that he has against Simmons. Simmons is bigger. He is stronger. And he's become a very patient defender. And it was an incredible performance. It really was. And it's not like Simmons did it by himself. Like, Joel Embiid was real key in terms of pick and roll defense in that as well. But that was a real show by Simmons last night.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And there were a lot of people talking about how ugly that game was in the first half.
I had made a couple of comments in the first half, and I had specifically talked about ugly offensive basketball. And offensively, that was an ugly first half. I will stand by that.
I agree. But the Sixers have to play ugly, man. They're not going to win by playing super pretty basketball against the best teams. So to me, like, you know, for a team that was, I don't know, I think they were 9th in defense coming into last night's game,
yeah,
cleaning the glass, that's got to get better. So to have performances like we've seen in the Toronto series and against Dallas, that was more like it. And yeah, what you said about Simmons, he made Luka look really bad. And you look at Luka's shooting stats at the end of the night, 6 of 13 from the field, 19 points. He made his threes, which he doesn't always do, first off. A couple of them off switches, which good for him. And I would say he got 2 bullshit fouls against Simmons too, which I thought were kind of iffy, like, is the hand part of the ball, that type of thing. Ben made him look really bad. And you know what stood out to me? Without Porzingis, the Mavs are a different team. And it kind of felt like the Sixers were showing Luka, hey, guess what? This is what we do all the time. We have to play offense with suboptimal spacing at all times.
Yeah.
Welcome to our ecosystem, man. And Luka looked bad. I mean, because they had Boban in the game and you have KP sitting on the bench, which, by the way, Porzingis, even from, I don't know, you know, 20 rows up where we are, one of the most ridiculous bodies I've ever seen in my life. Like a 7'3" string bean. He is massive. But to not have his pick and pop 3-point shooting, and you have Boban in the game, that allows Simmons to get up, that allows Embiid to get up on the screens, and those two in concert just bullied the hell out of Luka. And Luka, he did some stuff off switches, but Ben made him look really bad. And it kind of felt like the Sixers were saying, hey man, this is what we have to do. You know, I want, like, Embiid did not shoot that well from the field last night. But I wonder if he looks at Luka and says, hey man, welcome to my life. You know, I have to do this. I'm an MVP despite having this spacing at all times. And look at you without the great spacing and Josh Richardson and all of those things. They made him look bad. And to be fair to Dallas, they went 5 out at the beginning of the second half and they looked a little better. They started making some threes. Probably should have done that from the beginning of the game.
It is true. Like, they do not look like the same offensive team that they looked like last year. Part of that's Porzingis being in and out of the lineup. Part of that, like, I think these Richardson, I mean, look, we're watching what the Richardson for Curry swap meant for this team's offense. It's meaning the inverse for the Dallas offense. I do think Luka's life is more difficult, but I also think Ben is a tough matchup for him. Like I said,
yeah,
he relies on one of those physical advantages because he's not a super quick guy. He's not going to get there blowing by you off the dribble. He needs you to be able to have to concede something, and Ben doesn't have to concede anything. And he did a real good job.
And without the pick and pop threat, he had nothing for Ben. Nothing. Like, looked bad. Bad turnovers, bad shots, not getting an inch of space, Ben picking him up at half court. Awesome defensive performance.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, let's move on to the mailbag. A little bit of chatter this week. I don't know if you heard a little bit of chatter about some point guard named Kyle Lowry.
#from here.
Yeah, #from here. So we'll start off right from there. And this all stemmed, you know, I think it was, what was it? Kevin O'Connor over at The Ringer initially brought this up. And then Keith Pompey reported on it further, talking about Lowry's at least willingness, some might say desire, to end up in Philly. Lowry's agent then came out and sort of disputed that a little bit. But it wouldn't shock me if Lowry had real interest in returning to his hometown to compete for a championship. So he's a name that's going to be brought up a lot over the next month. I don't think you'll see anything happen before the deadline for a number of reasons, but he is a name who will be brought up a lot here. So we'll start off with him. This one from Joe. Would love to know what the Sixers could possibly give up for Lowry and why Toronto would be interested. So I guess we'll just start off from a salary matching perspective. And look, in order to get the Lowry, you have to get the $24 million in outgoing salary. In order to do that, and you can't add the $8.3 million trade exception. In order to get there, you can't aggregate that to reach a higher salary. So you can't use that. It pretty much means any starting point is going to include Danny Green and Mike Scott. Those two get you to about $20 million. You then need $4 million to make up the rest. That could be some combination of one of the Sixers' third or fourth string centers in Vincent Poirier or Tony Bradley, along with probably the young player that the Raptors are going to want, which you would assume would be either Tyrese Maxey, which is probably who they want, and Matisse Thybulle, who the two teams would probably theoretically settle on as a middle ground. So you're probably looking at some kind of deal that
plus a pick, right?
Plus draft compensation.
At least, right? Yeah.
You'd think there's going to be something, yeah. Maybe you give up Maxey and you don't have to give up the draft pick. Maybe, who knows? But a lot of that's going to depend on the market and whether or not Kyle really wants out. You know, I think that's part of why his agent coming out here is significant, because the best way you get him for a cost that you're not going to worry about too much is if Lowry demands to be in Philly. Well, if he's not demanding to be in Philly, then that cost is going to be a little bit higher because you don't have quite as much leverage. But yeah, you're probably talking about something in that range. Like I said, the two contributors in Green and Scott, one of the bench guys that have pretty much been kept around here as trade filler. A young player, and then maybe some draft compensation on top of that. I mean, look, I love Kyle Lowry. He hasn't really started aging yet, it seems, which I don't know how, because he'll be 35 here in a couple of weeks. He's still playing, like, and quite frankly, he's playing better than he was at 24 when he hadn't really yet found his groove in the league. He's not quite at the rate he was maybe 3 years ago, but he's playing exceptionally good basketball, and he hasn't really found his aging curve yet. That being said, like, there is some concern. Like, when you start talking about, okay, like, young players, you can probably, you'll live without Matisse Thybulle, but he is one of your better perimeter defenders, and if you lose Green and Thybulle, then you're running low on wing defenders. You're running low on ways to supplement them or add those skill sets back in, especially if you include a draft pick, because let's say you include a draft pick, a 2023 draft pick, I think is the one they could trade. I forget exactly. But then you're pretty much running out of draft picks to trade because you have two outgoing and the stepping rule. Of course, you can get draft picks back in other trades, but yada, yada, yada. There's just, you're running out of ways to build out the rest of your roster. And you're taking a bench that is already depleted and depleting it even more. Would I still have interest? Yeah, of course. But there are definitely some concerns.
I think the defensive concerns are a little less. Lowry sure. is still a pretty good defender. If you're talking about for your core players being able to stick him on the point guard types, it's like Matisse. Like, Matisse is the guy who's guarding the Kembas and the Kyries of the world now. Well, if that's Lowry, then you have a two-way player who can actually do that at a decent rate. I think it would be awesome if they could get Kyle Lowry. It just, does Toronto want to trade him?
It would seemingly be, and not only that, but like if he does want to be traded, who else becomes interested? Like, are the Clippers interested? Are another contender interested? It'll be interesting.
I think it was the Clippers and the Heat were the other teams that were mentioned.
Yep.
Sixers have more stuff than those teams.
Oh, sure. But I think this would be a lot easier. Like, I think Kyle Lowry alone would be a great addition for a playoff run. Like, I think he is pretty close to exactly what you need in what you're missing. You are right. He is still, even though he's going to be 35, a two-way player. He is the skill set the Sixers need. He's, when you start coming off of the Harden or Beal-esque stars, in terms of players who will realistically be available, he's pretty close to the top. So I'm with you. I would have a lot of interest. I mean, it's tough to match salary. It would be great if you didn't have to give up three contributors to get it done. Yeah. But I think this is one that has, like, if they are willing to trade him, and with how well they're playing, I'm not sure, like, Matisse Thybulle in a pick 3 years down the line, I'm not sure is quite enough to give up on the playoff run from their perspective. So it will be interesting to see. Like, I think in order to get this done, you might need Lowry to be like, yeah, I want to be in Philly.
Yeah, and there's a chance that that's the case. Like, that wouldn't surprise me. I guarantee you he lives in Philadelphia when his career is over. I'm pretty sure he has a house in the area. His wife is from here. His wife went to high school with him. I believe they live around Villanova somewhere where he went to college. His wife actually went to St. Joe's, which is interesting. She's a basketball player too. Yeah, I could see him
real strong in that one to overcome that hurdle.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's got the bragging rights on that one, I would say. Although I don't know exactly what the women's poly war has been like in recent years. Maybe it's different. I would just say, yeah, he needs to want to come here, and Toronto would want to trade him here. I guess from a positive standpoint, if you're looking for this to happen. Is Toronto looking to pay him after this year?
Sure.
If the answer to that is no, then you could see...
Also, are the Sixers looking to pay him after this year?
And would he be able to take... Or would he be willing to take a little less if he wants to finish his career in Philadelphia? There's a lot of moving parts here, which make it seem like it might be tough to do. I mean, you mentioned that it's going to take three or four players to just get to the matching salary. You know, Toronto's probably going to have to cut some players. You might have to take, like, Paul Watson back in a trade or something
like that. Well, but, then that gets hard because then you're increasing your own cost basis. End up happening there, and there's ways we don't need to go over too much, but, like, you could set up a second deal then where, like, you trade back a couple of Toronto fillers for that trade exception. So that way you don't have to increase the amount that you send to Toronto. So let's say you have another Stanley Johnson was the name I was thinking of because he's like just under $4 million. You take him back in a trade as part of the trade exception or for the trade exception, absorb him with the trade exception. Then you can still only send out $24 million rather than having to increase your own. But yeah, there's ways for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
So it seems like it might be tough to do. I would be for it though. You know, I understand that he has aging concerns, but shoots threes, is one of the smartest team defenders I've ever seen, can do stuff in transition with Simmons with like hit-ahead passes. It's just a winner. I know that's kind of old school, lame way to describe a player, but the mental toughness, all of those things, I would be very interested in bringing him here. He is not and I've heard this a little bit in market over the past couple of days. He is not the closer that some people think he is, like the Zach LaVine, Jimmy Butler level closer. You know, give him the ball at the end of games. He can do that a little bit, but he certainly is not, you know, just give the ball to Jimmy and clear out. He's not right. That level of closer. But in terms of like what you can get on the trade market, he would help you win a lot, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, no, and like any concern I would have, I think starting off with Simmons, Embiid, Lowry, Tobias Harris, and let's say Shake Milton as sort of your core five to contend for a title, I think that's a real good start to a playoff roster, much better than where they are currently. The question is now, how do you get these 6, 7, and 8 players in the rotation to finish that out? Because you are making this trade to win now. And in order to do that, I think you need a couple more pieces. This would limit your ability to get those final three players, but those players will almost always be easier to acquire than Kyle Lowry. So I'm with you. I would have a lot of interest in this.
But even before the Sixers are interested, Lowry's got to want to come here.
Yep.
Toronto's got to be willing to accommodate him.
Yep. And he's probably got to force that issue a little bit. And comment from the agent right now, what does it really mean? Who knows? There's a whole lot of saber-rattling that goes on right now. We're a month before the deadline. We'll see how this sort of takes shape here over the next month when it becomes real. And look, I do think, you know, if you are confident in Lowry in his 35-year-old season, his 36-year-old season, and his 37-year-old season, then you're willing to give up even more because you're not going to get him. I don't think you're going to get him over the summer for the taxpayer mid-level. Like, I think he's going to end up costing more than that on the open market. So there is value in getting his bird rights. I haven't yet 100% decided how comfortable I am giving him a 2 or 3 year deal at his age. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. And that does go into what I would be willing to offer, because you're just willing to offer more for a guy who you think can contribute beyond this year than you are for a rental.
It's certainly an interesting possibility, though. I don't know how real it is, but it's certainly something that if they can get it done, I'm not saying they would be like the favorites in the East, but their ceiling would go up.
For sure.
Because you would have to trade Danny Green, who, I mean, and to be fair, like losing Danny Green is losing a rotation player. So I don't want to completely minimize that, but the upgrade from Green to Lowry, that's real.
Yeah. I think Lowry would be huge in pretty much every series in the East, from the Celtics to the Bucks to obviously the Raptors, who you're hurting with that trade, who are basically punting the season if they would, which is why I think their asking price would still be pretty high. You know, the one I do worry a little bit is you're losing perimeter defenders for the Nets. And not that I'm comfortable with Danny Green or even Matisse Thybulle defending Kevin Durant or James Harden, but like more comfortable than I am Furkan Korkmaz, that's for sure. So there would be some consideration there, but like I said, I think those guys are...
I'm not that worried about the Nets. I don't think that makes... I mean, I'm worried about the Nets in general. I'm not worried about Lowry's fit with the Nets.
No, I mean, I think Lowry would be good for one of those three, but we'll see. It's fascinating.
He's got to want to force them out, and I guess if you're talking yourself into it, he's probably the greatest Toronto Raptor of all time. So
for a career,
has he
sure.
built enough equity, and does Masai see the writing on the wall for
like, if we're talking about kind of the bullshit that comes from agents and teams and executives and rumors and sources at this time of year, I think that's one that could play a part of it, because you're talking about a guy in Lowry who has a history and a legacy in that city to think about. Even if he wants to get to Philly, he doesn't want it known that he wants out of Toronto. So he probably, like, if you're Kyle Lowry and you
want
to say,
oh, he doesn't want out of Toronto. He wants out of Tampa.
Right. Fair enough. But even if you're Kyle Lowry, you want it to seem like, hey, I was fine where I was. Toronto just made the best business decision for themselves. They made this trade because they wanted Matisse Thybulle and a draft pick, not because I wanted out. So even if behind the scenes he would be telling Toronto, hey, I'd really love to go to Philly, his agent sort of has to deny that publicly at this time. So reports are reports.
He's just been eating meatball subs at Wawa in the Tampa area, and he just wants to come home.
No joke, those meatball subs did me in. Like when I was at my heaviest, that was because I ate a lot of meatball subs from Wawa. That was my go-to. And then they started putting the calories on there, and it was like, oh my god, that's 1,200 calorie sandwich. What am I doing with my life?
I've eaten a few in my life.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on. We have this question. Sorry, I had to flick a cat off my desk. This question comes from Scott. It's about Tobias Harris. His three-point attempts, three-point percentage, and free throw rate continue to regress to the norm. He's again passing up open threes and doing too much mellow stuff. What are the chances Morey deals him this season?
Small.
Well, I mean, yeah. So
there's it's funny that some people have told us that they think trading Tobias might be easier than people think on the outside. I'm not buying that. I think it's still pretty tough to trade him. I think that contract is, it is what it is.
I've had a lot of people ask, like, is that now a positive value contract? No. No, it's not. That's still a negative value contract. It is. He's just playing slightly better basketball, significantly better basketball, but not like he hasn't changed who he is. And this is sort of the question that Scott is getting to in his question. He is still the same player. His statistical profile is still that of the same player. He still has the same limitations. People aren't going to magically wake up and be like, hey, that is a player who is now worth a near max contract. That is still a tough one to trade. So yeah. I guess moving like so about regression, I'm not sure certainly his shooting and his willingness to shoot has regressed. You know, over the last 13 games here, he has taken 3.5 three-point attempts per game at 31% from three. So he is regressing back to his career norms in that regard. He's still getting the free throw line a little more than he normally does. Like he currently has about a 33% or maybe a 30% free throw rate over that span. So he's still getting the free throw line, not a lot, but slightly more than his career norms. And his passing over that span, he actually has like a 3-to-1 assist to turnover ratio with like 4.2 assists over his last 13 games. That is a peripheral stat that is better than his career norm. So I think he's regressing back to the norm in some instances, but still adding value in other ways he doesn't always. Bottom line is this. And I think whether or not the Sixers would trade Harris is interesting because when you trade Harris, you're almost conceding that you're getting back the worst player. Like you're trading him for cap purposes, for flexibility. I think Daryl Morey looks at Joel Embiid and the way he's playing and where he is in his prime. And I think he's very, very focused on competing for a title. And I think most potential Tobias Harris trades aren't going to get you a better talent back. And probably not going to get you a better fit back either, and might get you farther away. You would take a step back from title contention now with the belief that over time, a year from now, maybe even 2 years from now, you can take two steps forward towards title contention. Would he be willing to do that now? I don't know. It seems like the devil would be in the details on a trade. It seems like that trade where you can both gain flexibility and also get closer to a title might not be there at this trade deadline.
Yeah, I would say trading him is going to be hard. And despite some of the process-oriented stats, some of the peripheral stats regressing to his normal level, still shooting at a higher level than past seasons. Tobias is a good enough player to where, like, you just don't want to give him away for a terrible player who offers cap relief 2 years down the line, like you said. So that's the calculus that has to be in Daryl Morey's head. And I agree with you. Like, I don't think it's an automatic look for the cap relief in a couple of years, because to me, I think you're going to get a much worse player.
I think the only way this would, so I think Harris playing a better version of himself makes him a slightly less negative trade value contract, which would be really important if the Sixers had other blue chip prospects or assets to include in a trade for a star. But you would have needed Shake Milton to make that jump to 18 to 20 point per game scorer, where he could be a headliner in a Bradley Beal trade. And then you could use Tobias Harris both to give them another contributor, but also match salary. Well, Shake hasn't made that jump. You don't have the blue chip trade prospects to trade for a star of that magnitude. And Harris alone isn't going to be the focal point of a trade like that, because he is still a negative value contract. So I just don't think all of the circumstances are going to come together the way that you would need them to. All right, let's move on to Legs Sanity on Twitter. With COVID hanging over the season, does it make sense for the Sixers to make a big move before the trade deadline instead of waiting for the summer when the future may be more clear?
I don't understand.
So, like, there's been some concern, like, could something happen and the season be shut down, or maybe it doesn't finish or something like that. It's an unknown season because something could happen to derail it. I think I would push back pretty strongly. I think, first of all, like, the odds of the season just not being finished is pretty low at this point. Like, I think they will find a way to get through it. I don't think we've seen anything that would suggest that if they've been able to get this far, that they're going to stop. Money is a pretty big driving factor in human decision-making. And also, like, so even if we put, like, odds on that, like, let's say there is a 5% chance the season isn't finished and they don't crown a champion, which I think might be high. Even so, you've got to look at it. Well, this is Joel Embiid having an MVP caliber season. Would you not make moves because of that 5% and then risk wasting a year of Embiid's prime? No, I don't think that will factor into their decision-making all that much. You know, if there is a big move to be had at the trade deadline that Daryl Morey thinks pushes them towards a title contention, I think they will make it. If there is not, then they won't. And that might push them to make a big move in the summer, but I don't think it's going to have much to do with COVID in that decision-making process.
Yeah, agree. Sorry, I didn't have a lot for that one. My bad.
This one from Keith. I feel as though Ben has picked it up after the Harden trade. I know his knee was an issue to start the season, but I also feel the trade rumors got to him. Can you do his numbers split before and after the Harden trade? Whoops, I forgot to do that. But I guess just overall thoughts on whether or not the Harden trade rumors could have impacted his early season play.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, all he talks about is his mental after... I can't do this podcast. We're going to have to fix this.
I'm sorry. I was busy yelling at my cat. I put myself on mute specifically so you could go on your little rant there.
It's very distracting. I'm just saying. It's very distracting.
Dealing with it in person. I'm sorry. It's just... Go ahead. Keep going.
Okay. We'll see if I can do this. So yeah, all he talks about after games now is that his mental is better. Yeah,
which by the way, like, I don't know if that's like an Australian thing, but like your mental approach, like there's usually another word, your mentality. Anyway.
I've heard Americans use that too. Just a shorthand way of saying it. Whatever. That has gotten better since the Harden trade is over. Now, is it because of the Harden trade? I don't know. Would it be natural for it to improve now that he knows he's going to be on the team for the rest of the season, at least, perhaps? I mean, Harden really was the one big chip that was out there that you would be willing to put Ben in a trade for. So I would say that he certainly feels some level of security there. I don't think his knee was 100% to start the season. Whether that was an injury or just like he hadn't played a ton of basketball for 10 months. So maybe there was an element of him needing to feel a little bit more comfortable, get back into game shape, run up and down the floor a few times, which he did mention was more the issue. I don't know exactly what the thing is, but yeah, it definitely could have been the fact that once Harden left, okay, I know I'm here. People are, they're on me because I'm not playing that well. Now I'm going to start getting to the basket. I could see that being the case. Can I confirm it? No, because I can't confirm a lot of things that go on in between the years on Ben Simmons. But I certainly think like it didn't hurt his mentality.
Yes.
His emotional well-being, which so would be here, natural. That would be natural.
Of course. So I looked up the numbers while you were talking there, while I also wrangled a cat. The Harden trade happened in mid-January. Up to that point, Ben Simmons was averaging 12.4 points, 7.9 assists, and 8.6 rebounds, while shooting 51.5% from the field and getting the free throw line 4.5 times per night. Since then, he is averaging 17.8 points and 7.8 assists, while shooting 59.4% from the field and That's getting better. The free throw line 6.3 times per night. So the key there to me, I mean, he's making a lot more of his attempts, which I do think is not just small sample size. Like, I think the attempts he's taking are better. And I think you can see that statistically, not only in the field goal percentage, but in the free throw attempts. I think those two are the keys to me. And also, I mean, he's shooting two more. He's not only getting better shots, but shooting 2.5 times more per game.
And to me, those things go hand in hand. The more free throws you shoot are because you are attacking the rim harder, smarter, whatever.
Yes.
And your shots are going to improve if you're attacking the rim harder, smarter, whatever.
Yeah, 100%. And look, like you said, do I know exactly why that change has happened? No. Like most things in life, I don't think it's ever as easy as one explanation. I don't think it's 100% the knee, and I don't think it's 100% the trade rumors. And likewise, I don't think it's 0% the trade rumors. Like, these are still, and Ben, I think, tries very hard to not let it, I mean, JJ Redick, Looking Glass comment, he tries to sort of keep both an even keel, but also I think to keep us out of it to some degree. Like, I think he's just a private person in that regard. He's not going to ever completely open up on what he's thinking or feeling. I actually think he's done a better, like, he's opened up more this year, yeah. But he's still a little bit of a reserved private person. But he's also a human being. And when you have, besides just the, does my team not like me? Did I do something wrong? Like, why am I being traded? Yada, 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 which would be natural and a human reaction. There's also like, hey, I might have to pack up all my shit and move to Houston in the middle of a season in a very quick timeline. Like, there's just a lot going on in your head during these trade rumors. And we like to pretend they're not, and we like to look at everything through X's and O's, but there is certainly a human aspect to it. Whether it is, you know, the feeling slighted by being in trade rumors or the practical details of being traded or just the stress of all of that combined, it would be 100% natural for that to impact him to some degree. But I also think the knee was bothering him and he was slumping and he was not confident too. Like, I think there's probably 4 or 5 explanations that go into one equation.
We'll know the answer if he stinks to start next season. And then Maury drums up some fake trade rumors for some player. And that gives him the motivation to start playing better. Hopefully that doesn't come to that. But
yeah,
you never know.
You never know. I mean, there could be another star that comes available. And if that happens, like, nobody's untouchable for me. And I think probably nobody's untouchable for Daryl Morey. So we will see. All right. This one from Tony. If you could put this year's Embiid on the 0-1 Sixers or the 0-1 Iverson on this year's Sixers, which team is better and benefits the most? So it's really asking about supporting cast. And era of play.
I think if you put Embiid on the 0-1 Sixers.
Just because teams are so much worse back then. And so much worse constructed.
I mean, to be fair, the front court fit with him and Mutombo would not be, in that era, would be a little tough. Teams would not shoot one layup the entire season.
I mean, the front court fit with him and Tyrone Hill isn't much better. It's not like you had many stretch four options there. Oh, and that goes back. Like, are you including like Larry Brown, who, like, he's not putting it, like, would you put like Jermaine Jones as a four? Like, Larry Brown's not doing that. Not that Jermaine Jones is that good of a shooter anyway, but you don't have many options.
Oh God, basketball is so bad. I was thinking about this today, and this doesn't even go back as far as the 2001 team. but somebody brought up Thad Young as a trade option, and Thad's playing great as this small ball five in Chicago. I don't think it's realistic for a bunch of reasons. I mean, I remember that, but what I specifically remember about those teams were your wings, your 2-3 were Andre Iguodala and Thaddeus Young.
Yeah.
They would be a 4-5 now.
Yeah. You know, I think there's two ways. This is an interesting question because on the one hand, I think the current team skill sets would fit an Iverson Embiid duo better. For sure, 100%. Like when you start talking about Shake Milton and Danny Green and Mike Scott and Furkan Korkmaz and just some of the shooters that you would have around us, because that's really what you need. You need a whole bunch of spot up catch and shoot threats. Seth Curry, that is a much better team to complement your two stars. On the other hand, I would want Iverson.
I'm not seeing it. Iverson and Ben would be a disaster.
They would be. They would be. Offensively. That being said, I'd rather watch Embiid on the 0-1 team.
No, you're getting this all wrong. I'd rather watch.
Not from an aesthetic point, but just because Embiid in that era would wreck it with his three-point shooting and his perimeter game and the way he could do stuff that other people back then just couldn't do. And the way, and specifically, and where I was getting to, I want to watch Embiid and Iverson versus Shaq and Kobe in the finals. That's what I want to watch. That's my whole reason for having this answer. I want to see how those two Titans and Shaq and Embiid would go against each other in their primes, and how those two different styles of play would
work
against each other.
I was reading this question wrong. I thought you were trading both of them.
No.
You're adding them. Okay. Correct. Well, that makes a difference. Yeah. Well, then it's definitely the 0-1 Sixers. I mean, Embiid and Iverson would be awesome.
Well, but
Iverson this year. Okay, so that makes a difference. If you are keeping Embiid on this current team and you have Iverson, I meant Iverson and Ben would be kind of a disaster, but less of a disaster with Embiid there
and with the other space. Like I think this team would fit Iverson and Embiid better than the 0-1 team. I just want to watch the finals in 0-1 with Embiid on it. That's all I want. That's all I want.
That's a better question. Iverson is the perimeter scorer with Embiid and Simmons.
Yep.
Yeah. I still think the 0-1 team benefits more just because Embiid is better and the era of basketball was worse. But
yep.
Yeah, I mean, if you could put 0-1 Iverson on this team, like if you could trade through a time machine for older players, like, as much as the efficiency debate has been brought up over the past couple of days with Iverson and get called a nerd for mentioning that, I think he'd be pretty damn good without the handcheck rules.
I would love to see Iverson without handcheck rules and also with modern day spacing and belief on the game. Like we talk about whether Iverson fits now, I would love to see him with the kind of space teams are afforded now when he doesn't have Eric Snow and George Lynch and Tyrone Hill crumbing everything up. So yeah, from a vacuum, like I think Iverson and Embiid on this year's team would be significantly better built around them. But from a narrative perspective and from watching Embiid in that era, I want to see Embiid wreck it against Shaq and the 0-1 NBA.
Embiid against 0-1 Shaq would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. This one from Dan. Would it be tougher to defend Spike, Mike, or Kyle Newbeck? In terms of what we know about, Spike, I figure, can't move, so we'll cross him out because he has the back issue. Mike is probably more athletic, I would guess. Kyle seems like he is. First of all, Kyle's taller. Kyle's probably got, Kyle might be taller than me, and I'm 6'2". Or he's at least close. Probably 5'10", 5'11"-ish.
Kyle's a soccer player. He says that he's more of a rebounder, glue guy. This, and by the way, we haven't had a conversation about this in the two-on-two terms. This is just me talking to Kyle over years of knowing him and talking about basketball.
We have not challenged Kyle to a game.
I don't know. You only included this question so you could talk shit on Spike. And I'm not going to take the bait.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I would guess Mike is probably the best basketball player of those three. But Kyle is certainly the biggest. Not losing sleep over any of the three, though. All right, that's probably about all that I have. Anything else you want to get to before we leave?
No, I think that's a good note to end on. It's a familiar note from the last couple.
It is. Not a complete diss track. We held back on this one a little bit. But all right, sounds good. We'll probably have another podcast out early next week. Talk a little bit more about the Mavs game and then the games coming up, including what we have the Cavs on Saturday and then somebody Pacers. On Monday. Who's Indiana. Monday? Indiana. And then the Jazz to close out the first half of the season. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we'll talk to you soon.
See you, man.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.